You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. On this Veterans Day, as we honor the men and women who have sacrificed for our nation, we're going to begin today with a story about the forgotten soldiers, left to fend for themselves near a place that's meant to offer them service for theirs. We aired this feature by KCRW's Anna Scott a couple of months ago. It's still happening, and we'll talk to Anna on the other side of it. You're on San Vicente Boulevard in Brentwood, and you spot something unusual, a homeless encampment. That's not the unusual part, sadly. What is unusual, though, is the way this encampment looks. The whole sidewalk is taken up by a line of identical tents, big tents. And pinned to the outside of each one of those is an American flag. Now, this is right outside the West LA VA campus, the Veterans Administration campus. If you're not familiar with it, that is a huge gated property just west of the 405, a federally owned healthcare compound for military vets, run by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Many of LA's homeless veterans receive services there, so some folks actually stay on the sidewalk nearby. But this eye-catching encampment only popped up in the last few months.
It's a row of about 30 tents, and all the tents are supposed to be aligned. They're all supposed to have flags on the left-hand side.
Dean Lee is an Army veteran.
I served in 86 through 89 under Ronald Reagan, Bravo 529 Field Artillery in Fort Carson, Colorado.
He says PTSD from a sexual assault by another soldier led him to substance abuse and eventually homelessness. As chaotic as living on the streets is, Dean says this encampment has some military-style order.
We have standard operating procedures. We have fire guard. We have security watches. There's a lot of veterans that have a lot of different stories out here. Each one has their own individual story.
One thing that many share is the feeling that being a veteran and being homeless is, well, you know the saying, adding insult to injury. Yeah.
It really gets you down your spirituality. After serving the country, and I'm not complaining. By all means, I have a gratitude list longer than a complaint list. But at the end of the day, you know, I did serve this country, and it hurts.
And for some of the veterans here, that hurt is coalesced around a cause. What they see is decades of negligence when it comes to housing homeless vets on the West LA VA campus. And in that respect, this encampment is meant to draw attention.
We're standing our ground as a peaceful protest.
But against what exactly? And why now? That story, it turns out, is only the latest development in a much bigger saga, one that involves a prime piece of LA real estate, a corruption scandal, a pandemic, and a plan to pick up the pieces. KCRW's Anna Scott takes it from here.
The story really begins 133 years ago, in 1887. Hey, we told you it was a saga. That year, a wealthy family donated the land that's now the VA campus with the stipulation that it had to serve as a home for military veterans. And for a long time, it did. At one point after the Korean War, between 4,000 and 5,000 veterans lived there. But by the 1970s, the VA started leasing out the property for all kinds of things. They maintained a hospital and other veteran services, but brought in a dog park, a UCLA baseball stadium, even a parrot sanctuary at one point. Meanwhile, many veterans lived on the streets.
You know, in the military, you never leave a fallen comrade behind on the battlefield. Why would we leave them behind here on American soil?
Bob Rosebrock is an Army veteran who lives in Brentwood, and every week for the past 12 years, he's protested outside the gates of the West LA VA. I met him there earlier this month.
Today is our 648th consecutive Sunday, and that's what we're trying to do, is to get housing for our veterans on the other side of that fence where they belong. It was legally deeded, and we've got veterans sleeping on the sidewalk here.
Now, Bob is not the only person to take on this issue. A decade ago, some homeless veterans sued VA officials over how the West LA campus was being used. Some of those non-veteran-related leases were deemed illegal and canceled. The parrot sanctuary is gone, for example. Later, it turned out there was a bribery scheme going on at the campus. Another VA official and a guy who ran private parking lots there were sentenced to prison. In short, it was a big, ugly mess. But from the fallout came a new vision for the property. 4 years ago, the VA unveiled a proposal to bring the campus back to its original mission and transform it into a community with more than 1,600 new apartments for homeless veterans. So, happy ending, right? Well, so far, only about 50 of those units are open. The next round of about 200 apartments is scheduled to open in 2022, and it'll be 10 years before the whole thing is done. Bob argues LA's homeless veterans need help now. He wants to see a huge triage site on the campus, tents, portable toilets, social services, enough to help all of the nearly 4,000 homeless veterans in LA County.
We've been asking forever on it, and really, we even sent President Obama a letter, a very respectful letter, saying we wanted emergency shelter inside and everything.
I've heard people say, well, we can just put up tents on the ground, but they're still homeless. They're living in a tent, but they're still homeless.
Stephen Peck is president and CEO of U.S. Vets, the country's biggest veterans services nonprofit. His organization is part of a team responsible for executing that grand new plan for the campus. Because the VA itself doesn't build housing, it's mostly a healthcare provider. It had to bring in developers and housing experts to actually finance and build all of this. That's one reason the plan is taking so long. Also, it's an enormous job.
The infrastructure is 50 or 60 years old. All of the buildings need to be renovated significantly. They were never residential. So it's a huge job, and the VA has never done this. So it's going to be a while, and no one's happy about that.
But it will be worth it, Stephen says, because in the end, it will provide enough permanent housing for almost half of LA County's homeless veterans. So that's where things stood until a few months ago. Enter the coronavirus and a new urgency to get people off the streets. In April, officials with the West LA VA did something that hadn't been done in Los Angeles for 40 years before that. They opened a tent city on the property with access to bathrooms, meals, and services. When Bob Rosebrock, the guy who protests every Sunday, heard about this, he thought, finally.
And first thing I did is I bought a 10 by 14 walk-in tent, took it to the VA, and they wrote back and said, no, we don't want your tent.
It was too big.
Only tent they would accept are these small pup tents. It's inhumane, and we can do better than that.
So Bob got some donors, ranging from his sister to the conservative activist group Judicial Watch, and they bought more than two dozen tents and American flags. One person who helped Bob deliver them was Robert Reynolds.
So at that time, we immediately set the tents up right outside the VA gate and started getting homeless veterans off the sidewalk and in somewhere to stay.
Robert is an Army veteran who served in Iraq. Combat left him with PTSD. A few years ago, he landed on San Vicente Boulevard himself. Now he's housed, but he comes back to this street most days to help other veterans. He views this encampment as an informal bridge between the streets and the programs on the VA campus, from substance abuse treatment to housing assistance.
We are currently trying to push people into the VA. That's our thing. We bring people here. We have a lot of guys that have gone in. We have had 45 guys go in that have come through this encampment out here. And we really pride ourselves on the fact that no longer will a homeless veteran arrive at the West LA VA and have to sleep on the sidewalk. They can at least get in a tent, get some food, and be around other veterans and have some, you know, positivity while we get them signed up and get them their services.
Robert also sees the encampment as a protest. He doesn't think the big plan for the VA property is enough. He wants to see the amount of housing on the land go back to its Korean War era peak.
We want this property returned back to its original capacity of 5,000.
Stephen Peck from U.S. Vets says the current plan is already the biggest project of its kind.
This is about three times bigger than anything else in the country. To do something three times bigger than that is kind of unimaginable.
But Stephen says he gets the mistrust among some homeless veterans and their advocates.
The West LA VA, I guess, made every mistake that they could. They were treating it like it was their property, not veterans' property. So there's a lot of residual anger out there, even with this new plan. I think it's understandable. At some point, they're going to have to let it go.
Over the next few weeks, the West LA VA plans to expand its tent program from about 50 to 100 people. They're also moving it from a couple of parking lots to a lawn with space for bigger tents. VA officials say they're doing outreach on San Vicente Boulevard to try and move eligible veterans there to the grass inside. So it's not the ideal scenario anyone imagined. People won't be moving into apartments yet, but soon, the West LA VA expects to house more veterans on its property than it has in years.
That's KCRW's Anna Scott, who covers housing and homelessness for us at the radio station. And by the way, that was a story that we ran a few weeks ago. But we wanted to bring Anna back in to talk about any updates with this story. And she joins us right now. Hey, Anna.
Hey, Steve.
You said the VA was planning to expand the tent city. Have they done that? I mean, what are the numbers now?
Yeah, so the tent city that they have on the campus, they have made more room there. They have expanded the capacity to accommodate 100 people, and they've moved it onto a lawn. But they're still just at half capacity. There's still just 50 people in the program thereabouts. They recently told me that more than 270 people have gone through the program. Nearly 30 of them have gone back to the streets, but more than 100 have graduated to transitional or permanent housing. And then the rest have seen just a mix of outcomes from moving in with family to going into medical facilities or leaving the state without giving any forwarding information. So those are the latest numbers that I have now.
And on this Veterans Day, I mean, those tents are still there outside the VA campus, right, on Veterans Row?
Yes, those tents are still there. I haven't been back in recent weeks, but I do know that the situation hasn't changed much.
I want to talk about the sanctioned campground that's actually on the VA campus there in West Los Angeles. I mean, there's been talk about testing this idea in other parts of LA as well with non-veterans. Where are those plans?
Well, there are at least two city council members who are considering setting up designated camping areas in their districts, Joe Buscaino and Mike Bonin. And their spokespeople say that both of them are still in the process of trying to lock down locations. So it's pretty early on, but they're actively exploring the idea.
I imagine it's a more complicated process when you don't already have, you know, like a big piece of land like the VA does in West LA, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the VA has other advantages, too, in running this kind of program. They have their own healthcare system. There are also more housing resources for homeless veterans than non-veterans. So one of the concerns that's come up in, you know, possibly doing this elsewhere in the city is how do you make sure that people aren't getting stranded at the encampments that you set up? And also, is it really cheaper once you take into account the cost of securing the land, providing security, food, social services? You know, does this really save money over other options that actually bring people indoors? So I think that's a debate that you'll hear if these plans do move forward.
Good Lord. It is such a complicated story, one that has so many wheels turning at the same time. By the way, you'll be back with us tomorrow to talk about what a Joe Biden administration, he's now president-elect, what it may mean for the fight against homelessness here in Los Angeles. And I look forward to hearing from you then as well.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it as well, Steve.
Thank you for your reporting. KCRW's Anna Scott.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Throughout this week, we've been hearing from some of the winners of last week's election. And here in Los Angeles, one of the most closely watched races was City Council District number 4. The district itself is massive. It covers Griffith Park, Silver Lake, the Hollywood Hills, a piece of Koreatown, around 250,000 people in that district. David Rue held that seat for the last 4 years, and incumbent city council members don't often lose in LA. In fact, it's been almost 2 decades since it last happened. But the challenger in District 4, Nithya Raman, attracted an outpouring of progressive support. Hundreds of young campaign volunteers knocked on tens of thousands of doors all across the district, and Hollywood joined in too. The likes of actresses Natalie Portman and Busy Phillips threw in their weight and money behind her as well. She even got an endorsement from Bernie Sanders, and it worked. Nithya Raman is an urban planner from Silver Lake, and she's now the incoming city councilwoman for District 4. And Nithya joins us right now. Welcome. Congratulations to you.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me.
You're a co-founder of Neighborhood Homelessness Coalition. This is the CELA, right? So I know homelessness is something close to your heart. The last homeless count that we got in Council District 4 saw a very large increase in homelessness during David Roo's tenure. What's been the city's successes and failures when it comes to helping people who are experiencing homelessness?
One of the biggest issues, and something that I saw when I worked at City Hall briefly in 2014, is that for many, many years, and even continuing to today when we've started to spend a lot more to address homelessness head on, is that the city has responded with policing and criminalization first, and has put much more money into that rather than into housing and services. We could really transform our response to homelessness if we were to lead with outreach and services really anchored at the neighborhood level and invest more in cheaper and more effective ways of increasing the supply of shelter beds and housing here in LA.
Is that what got you involved in politics in the first place? Was it this issue or what issue was it actually?
Yeah, it was definitely my interactions with the city on homelessness that led me to think about running. I started this homeless coalition in my neighborhood with a few of my neighbors, and I had started it because of my experiences at City Hall and seeing the system that we had set up here in LA. LA, we've done a very bad job of providing services here in Los Angeles. We have less than a quarter of the shelter beds that we need for our broader unhoused population here. And in the area where I live, Silver Lake and the surrounding neighborhoods, if you were experiencing homelessness here, there was almost nothing by way of resources. No shelter beds, no case managers you could walk in and talk to, not even a bathroom or a shower that you were welcome to use in this entire region of the city. We had made it such that if you were experiencing homelessness, not just in this region, but in most parts of the city outside of really Skid Row and maybe a portion of Hollywood, that if you were experiencing homelessness, we had made it almost impossible for you to find the resources that you needed to get out of homelessness. And my frustrations with that, my work through the coalition in pushing for more resources here and seeing, you know, a reluctance from the city to take the urgent action that I felt was needed, that was what pushed me to run. But I do think that the broader thesis of the campaign was bigger than that. It drew from my work on homelessness, but it really looked at the city as a source of incredible power and one that could, move us towards greater justice, towards greater sustainability, towards a better living condition for all of us here in LA. And I found in my interactions with the city that they really didn't use those powers to advance those goals for all of our residents.
We certainly have other problems going on in the city as well and across the nation, for that matter, when it comes to the coronavirus. COVID-19 numbers are surging once again. We're heading into the winter months. This is when epidemiologists tell us that things are likely to get much worse. What will you be looking to do when you take your seat at City Hall to really get a grasp at this?
You know, one of the things that disappointed me over the last few months, I thought initially our response here in Los Angeles was very measured and really good. And I feel like we had a sense of unity in terms of how residents were responding to it. At some point, we opened up very quickly. I spoke up about that when it happened then, but I think, I didn't hear a lot of pushback from other elected representatives on this issue. And I think going forward, what we need to do is to look at the science and to make sure that as we deal with this issue, that we open up in ways that are really measured, that are thoughtful, and that put the safety of workers and of residents at the forefront of any decision that we're making.
I mentioned that your campaign got a big push from a burgeoning progressive movement. George Gascon unseated the incumbent Jackie Lacey in the LA County District Attorney's race. Measure J passed. Do you think this is a one-off reaction to the protests that we saw in the summer, the progressive shift in politics? What do you think that your election signifies and the campaigns and the wins of those other races, too?
I certainly think that the protests galvanized interest in local politics in a way that hadn't existed in Los Angeles before. But one of the reasons I chose to run at this time was because this moment presented an incredible opportunity because of our change in local elections. I ran in the first election where municipal elections and federal elections were lined up. I had a real opportunity for me. As a resident of Los Angeles for a long time, I saw a real disconnect between the progressive values that I held and that I voted on at the national level and the policies that were coming out of our local institutions, like out of our city hall. And this election was unique because so many more people came to the polls to vote for their presidential candidate, you know, their primary candidate in March, and for Biden against Trump, because we're in LA, in November. And so we had an opportunity in this campaign, which I think was also seen in other campaigns, that many more people who have very progressive values were already at the polls. And I think this changing of the elections and the work that campaigns did to get the word out about the importance of local elections really had an impact in getting those progressive values reflected in the election results. And I think that will be a very durable change going forward for LA.
Those protests and the Black Lives Matter movement had a big influence, obviously, on the election. BLM calling for defunding the police, which has become a controversial topic across the country. What does that phrase mean to you? Because it means different things to different people. What does it mean to you?
Yeah, you know, I think here in LA, about 8% of calls for service for the police are related to violent crime. The rest have to do with a range of issues for which armed response may or may not be the most appropriate response for those issues. I saw this in homelessness, where LAPD, you know, responded to non-urgent calls for service about homelessness all the time. And in that case, I think funding outreach workers who are trained to respond to issues that people experiencing homelessness are having and can actually help address the root cause of that call for service, which is that people are living on the street, can actually help people get into housing, can help people get into services, making sure that we are ensuring that that kind of response is funded and is the kind of response that we're having to those kinds of calls for service. I think that's really, really important in thinking through how we, you know, reimagine policing here in LA.
But again, when you hear the phrase defund the police, I mean, there are some people who want to, particularly the Black Lives Matter LA movement, they want to actually defund the police or, you know, get rid of it completely. It sounds like you don't necessarily agree with that.
No, I mean, I think for me, you know, there is still violent crime here. And I think, you know, armed response is appropriate for some issues. I just think that we have in Los Angeles used armed police response for so many things where armed response is really unnecessary and actually may worsen or exacerbate the situation. And I think making sure that we understand and do a real audit of where we are spending police time and spending, you know, dollars is a really important first step to understanding how we think about changes going forward.
Before I let you go, what's your first order of business? What do you want to tackle first when you're sworn in whatever, 4 or 5 weeks?
Well, you know, I think if you'd asked me this during the primary, I would have said changing our response to homelessness in the district and pushing for those changes citywide would have been my first order of response. I will say that because the pandemic is continuing, because of the economic and other kinds of devastation that are resulting from it, that issue, I think, is a real priority for the city. I think we have to make sure that residents have the support they need to exit this period as healthy and as stable as possible. And I think the city really needs to be focusing all of our resources in thinking about that right now. I think that also will impact homelessness. There was a huge amount of housing insecurity going into this pandemic. That has only worsened. And I think making sure that we are really strengthening the mechanisms through which people are able to stay housed, that is going to be a really, really important part of the next few months of work here in LA.
I want to thank you for spending some time with us today. And congratulations again on your win. Nithya Raman, the newest member of the LA City Council, getting sworn in early to mid-December. She represents District 4. Nithya, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's going to do it for us today on this Veterans Day. Tomorrow, what President-elect Joe Biden's win could mean for the problem of homelessness across the country, of course, but particularly here in Los Angeles, where we have some big problems with homelessness. You're going to hear about it tomorrow. We're online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Do like so many other Angelenos do. Get the show automatically sent to you every day. Subscribe to the podcast, won't you? And tell us how you're doing, too, at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Jenna Cagle, Angel Carreras, Sonia Geis, PJ Shahamet, Phil Richards, Mario Saavedra, Amy Todd, Mike Stark, and Christian Bordahl all made the show happen today. If you're a part of our nation's armed forces, thank you so much for your service. We salute you today and every day. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Have a great night.